Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Christina Bianca Harrison, a veteran translator and simultaneous interpreter who is fluent in English, French, and Romanian. And she leverages over two decades of linguistic experience. Beyond her professional success lies a transformative journey of holistic healing and spiritual exploration. Embracing Reiki and Tarot, Christina discovered profound healing and self-discovery. Christina guides clients on a transformative journey, unlocking hidden truths and fostering self-discovery. A modern-day alchemist, she transmutes life's challenges into growth, healing, and spiritual evolution opportunities. Christina shares her insights through workshops, classes, and retreats. Christina enjoys nature, yoga, meditation, and cherishing moments with loved ones. Committed to love, compassion, and integrity, Christina navigates life's complexities, aiding others in discovering their true path to healing and wholeness. And with that, Christina, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It is an absolute pleasure having you on today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave. I'm also very happy to be able to have this experience.
We were introduced through a mutual colleague of ours, Noemi Barris. And she has this unique knack of matching really, really good guest contributors with podcast hosts. And when we had our pre-chat, I think it was obvious that we hit it off pretty well. We aligned on a lot of different matters, and we find ourselves here today.
Yes, you see, sometimes things happen without us putting too much effort into it. You just let naturally flow. And the right people are going to are always going to arrive in our lives when the time is needed.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Nobody comes into our life by chance. It's always by, I think, the divine plan and divine intervention.
Exactly.
So, Christina, my first question for you is, please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
I think that the experiences that have led to me reaching to the point where I am at this particular moment in time are related to, are based on adversities and rebellion, and are based on the fact that I have always wanted to do things my way, and I never wanted to do anything based on other people's beliefs. Because in that experience, I wanted to find my own self. In following others, in being able to do whatever I was told, I wanted to see whether I truly resonated with that. And as long as I did resonate with that, I realized that everything was peaceful, everything was going on according to the plan. But then I wanted to see what happens if it doesn't go according to the plan. Where am I going to be in this equation? And I always found myself secluded because of that. And it kind of like, I didn't find pleasure in it, but I felt that I was doing the right thing, although I did not know that I was doing the right thing. You know what I mean? So whenever I wanted to do things my way, because I wanted to, my mistakes are mine, you know? And this is what is very important to realize, that if anyone in this world is going to tell you that look how many mistakes you have made and look where you are now because of those mistakes, this is just a mere reflection of the fact that these mistakes are mine and I own mm-hmm. them. As much as we own our accomplishments, this is how we also need to cherish our mistakes, because they are ours and we need to be proud of them.
Yes, I'm a firm believer that mistakes are information. But I mean, so often a lot of individuals I know get caught up in the perfectionistic trap where they believe they have to do everything 100% correctly. And that's, to me, is an illusion, because we are going to make mistakes. Mistakes are opportunities for growth. And if we look at mistakes from that perspective, they are not going to be as debilitating to our thought process and to preventing us from engaging in the world.
Indeed, indeed.
So today, one of the things we were going to talk about today, and I think the focus of the podcast, was embracing uniqueness, a path beyond comparison and competition. So from your experience, what contributes to individuals constantly comparing themselves with others?
Of course, it is deeply rooted in the social norms, as well as the psychological norms, and also the fact that so as soon as you start to read and to write, etc., you are being constantly bombarded by advertising, by social media, so everything comes from the outside, mm-hmm. right? So, of course, the comparison is inevitable, because by comparing yourself to another person, you see your worth. You think you see your worth. So if you see, for example, someone's success, that doesn't mean that your life is less, I mean, or your life is dwindled because of another person's success. So your worth, I mean, there is a long way until I realized that my worth was not determined by other people's success. So whenever comparison came into place, of course, the first and foremost cradle of comparison is parenthood, right? Parents who raise you to the best of their capacities and abilities, unknowingly, they might bring this up, like, okay, look what X and Y are doing. And so they never focus, but sometimes the parents, like in my case, they did not focus on my abilities, but they focused on the comparison between my abilities and other abilities. So, of course, I think that for the first 20 years of my life, I was always conditioned. So being conditioned and being compared, so this is exhausting, you know. And the comparison went to a point where, for example, when I graduated from high school, I had to be valedictorian because I had to be better than. You see, comparison. In the university, I was, again, valedictorian because I had to be better than mm-hmm. the best. I mm-hmm. mean, not necessarily better than, but the best. So you see, I always found external comparisons when I had to be the best because this is what my parents wanted of me. So, but this killed me slowly, slowly. Why did it kill me? It killed me because I had to follow a script. Mm-hmm. That was my script. This is what I have to do. Otherwise, I don't know what otherwise. There is no otherwise. You know what I mean? So there is a long journey until we break free from this particular comparison. Because no amount of comparison, I think it's perfect for mathematicians who have to compare the results of data mm-hmm. or data sets or whatever. So I think that comparison only works perfectly well in this particular scientific field. But apart from mathematics and apart from exact sciences, I don't think that comparison should literally exist in today's society. Because it literally kills the everything inside of humans. It kills the creativity. It kills the individuality mm-hmm. within you. And obviously, you did not come here to follow anyone's path. You came here to follow your path. And in following your path, you're always going to be thrown away. But by being thrown away, you find yourself. And this is what I encourage everyone to do. because you never know what beauties lie beneath that being that state of being thrown away, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you're right, because I think the pressure to engage in comparison is externally motivated. You know, we listen to that through our parents and even through some of our peers as well, too, depending on the peer group we get involved with, if they particularly have set high expectations for success. But, you know, the thing that I was thinking of, Christina, prior to coming on the air with you today, was that I wonder if the people that we're comparing ourselves with, that those we're comparing ourselves with, aren't comparing themselves with somebody else. I mean, if I'm comparing myself with you, how do I know you're not comparing yourself with somebody else? So, I mean, that everybody, I think, engages in that, because
it's a never-ending chain.
Yeah, it's a never-ending chain. And the other thing I think that happens when we do that as a matter of routine, our locus of control becomes external. Our happiness or contentment is dictated by how other people see us. And the second thing, we don't rely on the resources that we have that lie within, because from my own experience dealing with, you know, my own life path, the answers that I seek to fashion my own life path lie within me. They don't lie within anybody else. I can use you as kind of, you know, for feedback, for clarity, but ultimately
for validation.
Yeah, but the decision I make to walk my path is going to be based on me reflecting on what I've heard, what I see within myself, and then going from there.
Yes, and also, as you mentioned, expectations at a certain point. You see, when you go into, when you're living this life with expectations, there is no other certainties. Expectations are not meant to shape us, but the certainties are made to shape us. And the certainty is we can only achieve, you know, I know it will be okay. I'm not hoping it will be okay. You know what I mean? And if you follow this, you relinquish any type of outcome. I mean, any type of attachment to the outcome. Because, for example, let's say we go to, I don't know, a consultation, whatever. Oh, I'm going to pay so much money on that particular doctor or whomever. I'm not just saying one profession. And then you have expectations that things are going to change. But that expectation is just based on the fact that you're paying a lot of money for that particular professional to provide a service. But if you attach yourself to the outcome, then this is when you're going to create a disruption, an innovative disruption, so to say, because we need to have certainty that it's going to be okay. We need to know that it's okay before that okay happening. And that hence, when we relinquish all expectations, that is when our true conviction comes into place.
Yeah, and I think releasing expectations of how things should be or should
exactly.
Occur, I think gives us the freedom and empowers us to really craft our own path and be co-creators of our own reality in conjunction with the universe.
Yes.
If I'm coming to you for guidance and I feel like I've been a victim of the endless cycle and of comparison, and I want to break that. How do you teach me to break break the cycle of constant comparison, or break those shackles? Where do we start?
So first of all, there is also a self-analysis of who do I think I am compared to who am I in reality. So it's almost like looking in a mirror. And if the mirror is a bit dusty, I'm going to see myself with different mm-hmm. eyes than when I see myself in a mirror, which is super clean. By being authentically true to ourselves, who we really think we are and who we really are. Now, it almost goes to the awareness that if I know who I am, is it really who I am? So it's always questioning. It's always questioning. If I do compare myself to others as I previously mentioned, is my worth, if I see someone's success, does that mean that my worth is less? And when you compare, it's inevitable to compare ourselves to others, but in terms of enriching our lives. So for example, if I see a piece of myself in you, it means that I can literally, like, this is intertwined, mm-hmm. you know? So I've always said, learn from the best. Learn from the best, and you're going to become part of that best. We learn from the worst, and also we're gonna experience the worst. So we need to experience the worst as well, like the ugly, the, like in that movie, you know, the bad, the ugly, and the, what with Clint Eastwood,
the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Exactly, the good, the bad, and we need to experience the ugly, because through contrast we get to realize our true nature. We need to experience everything so that we find ourselves in that little bit, like, everyone is afraid of darkness, right? Mm-hmm. But without the darkness, the light would not be emphasized. So why are you afraid of dark if you were there in your mother's womb for 9 months in darkness? Oh, right. And that is where you came mm-hmm. from. So that is where you got all the knowledge from. That is where you were created slowly, slowly, step by step. So how can we be afraid of darkness if darkness is the knowledge that we come from?
Right.
So that is how this comparison is and then we realize that comparison it's a mere illusion.
Mm-hmm.
We came here interconnected. We did not come here to compare ourselves with the other. We came here to celebrate our uniqueness and our differences.
Yes, and we were meant to not only celebrate our uniqueness or differences, but witness that with a compassionate heart and without judgment, and so that we could learn from each other.
Yes, and judgment, you see, whenever the mind kicks in, it destroys whatever the intuition does. So mind is important. Again, I'm going again with the fixed, like, mathematics. Mind is important for operations, for repetitive things, for, like, computer-related things. This is where mind is really important. Okay, I'm going to the market and I'm going to buy 1 kilo of X and 1 kilo of Y. How much do I have to pay? So this is where we need to use the mind. But when we use our mind to destroy people's worth based on whatever we think that we can do to destroy that person with our words, then mind is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. So you see also the intuition. If we always try to follow our intuition, it's that spark. It's interesting. Oh, no, it's not. You see, the mind, when the mind kicks in, it always annihilates whatever the intuition says. And there we always get hurt, because intuition is curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is how the intuition was made. You do not suffer if you follow your intuition. We did not come here to suffer. We came here to experience the suffering,
mm-hmm.
yes, but we did not come here to perpetuate it throughout our lives, because we needed to learn something from it, and we need to turn our suffering into our assets.
Yes, I agree 100%, and I think individuals who have developed resilience as a result of life-altering challenges have done that. You know, they've embraced the darkness. They've looked at the teachings that the darkness renders, and, you know, they discover their authenticity and true path, and they make the decision to re-engage in life accepting the fact that they know that their life's going to be permanently changed because of what's happened.
Yes, and we have the duty to belong to ourselves, you know. I don't belong to anyone. I don't belong to my husband. I don't belong to my partner. I don't belong to my parents, because children do not come from their parents. They come through their parents, right? They choose. But I do not belong to anyone but me. Mm-hmm. I have the duty to honor myself, and I have the duty to honor whomever I am, even if I'm, seen as being worthless, or even if I'm considered as being good for nothing, at least I have the duty to belong to myself. And it's almost like, you see, the parents, they have a duty towards their children. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they love their children. Mm-hmm. Like, if you take parents who have, for example, because it's not always that the children will come out of love. There are also children on this planet that came without their parents wanting them to come on this earth. So, but that doesn't mean that they don't care, that take care of them. That doesn't mean that's that they right. don't have the duty. Right. So that's the same that we have to do with ourselves. We have the duty to care for our bodies. We have the duty to care for our minds, even though we don't love ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, because we might feel worthless. There are many people who feel worthless because they don't love themselves. And that's why they engage in all sorts of activities like alcohol and whatever. Because this is what's happening when we don't love ourselves. Mm-hmm. But that's the first step towards self-love, to have the duty towards ourselves. This is the first step towards love. And that's why parents who have the duty to provide shelter for their children, whatever, eventually they will love them, those children. It doesn't have to be coming. Of course, everything comes out of love, but they don't see that as duty, as love, mm-hmm. you know. So that's why, you see, if love is too much of a, it's too strong of a word, if love is too strong of a word, at least we have the mm-hmm. duty. And that cannot be, the duty cannot be, you know, mistaken for anything else. Like, duty is mm-hmm. duty. You know, because at least we came here. At least there, what are the odds for us to be here? There are so many parents who want to have children and who are not able to, and they sell their homes in order to have in vitro or sterilize, artificial insemination, whatever. And they are not managing. They don't manage to have children. But they don't lose their hope. And in the end, they realize, okay, this is what it's meant to be. So you see, what are the odds for us, even if you're not wanted as a child, even if, because there are many children who are not mm-hmm. wanted, but that the mere fact that they are alive, this is a celebration in and of itself. Mm-hmm. You know, like at least they have achieved mm-hmm. something. At least they are here. And the rest is just history or her story.
Yeah, that's her story. I like that. I think we come into this life, you know, with a specific divine purpose and intention. Exactly. And, you know, I mean, we can learn from other people's challenges and, you know, from anything. And I think, you know, I think also I think a true alchemist looks at everything. They integrate the lightness, they integrate the dark, and then they come up with their own conception of who they are. And that conception of who they are is authentic. And the other thing that she also mentioned about duty, I think you're right. I think eventually duty can lead to love. And for some individuals, duty is synonymous with love. So,
exactly.
You know, they may not necessarily say that they love you, but they will show you that they love you by what they do. And you know the old saying, you could tell a lot about a person, not by what they say, but what they do. And exactly. And I've had several individuals in my life who are not going to tell me that they love me, but they'll show me through, you know, being loyal to me or, you know, just being attentive to my needs or being responsive when I need to be. Those are all forms of love without actually saying the word. Can you outline some action steps that we can take to embrace our own individuality and leverage uniqueness for professional and personal growth?
Yeah. So first of all, when it comes to our professional growth, I think that before the professional growth comes to personal growth. And personal growth can only occur when we are true to ourselves. So if I'm true to myself in terms of whatever I'm doing, if I'm watching television, am I paying attention to it? If I'm a movie, if I'm listening, am I really listening? So you see, because everything that we do in our personal life is being reflected in our professional life. So if I have a child, for example, that doesn't mean that I'm not able to perform any type of duties outside of this, you know, mother and child relationship. But the depth with which I am doing something. This is being also reflected in the professional. So it's a matter of how conscientious. So first of all, I think it's a matter of how conscientious am I really in any type of endeavor that I have, even the smallest chores. And if you don't feel like doing something, that doesn't mean that you have to do it, you know? And if I feel that I don't want to do it, it means that I have a reason. It means that my body is so tired that it cannot no longer perform anything. So paying attention to our bodies, paying attention to whatever our body needs in order for us to be able to have a healthy body and a healthy mm-hmm. mind. But most importantly in the professional life, it's the sense of duty. Again, we go back to duty. You see, if you are being conscientious, if you are being true to yourself, you're always going to be true to the others. But if I'm always going to have narratives in my head and I'm going to lie to myself, oh, I'm going to do that. You see, there is a huge difference between determination and motivation. Mm-hmm. Because motivation is... And it's particularly relevant to your question. If I'm motivated to do something, my motivation can come and go. Mm-hmm. But if I'm determined, I'm gonna do whatever it takes. So if it is raining, I have to do it. And also the difference between have to and must. When we were in high school, we learned. I have to go or I must go. And I asked the teacher, what is the difference between I have to and I must? And they were like, okay, must is more, is stronger than have to. And then years later, I delved into it and I found out about the fact that have to is externally. I have to go to work. I have to do it. I don't want to do it, but I have to do it. You know what I mean? So it doesn't like my needs are not in accordance with my wishes. But when I say I must, that comes from within. So you see, even the English language has peculiar, unknown, but peculiar ways in which you use words. So I have to versus I must. So paying attention to the words that we use also shapes us into who we truly are. When you use the word understand, did you know that, for example, under plus stand means, so if I'm asking you, do you understand me? And you say, yes, I understand. It means that you stand under me. Mm-hmm. That means that we are not equal into our conversation. It means I'm talking to you, but I'm not talking with you. When I'm talking to you, I'm giving you an order. You're not allowed to talk. When I'm talking with you, we have a two-way conversation. So the same like, paying attention to the words that we are using, because the words, without realizing, they are frequencies that match our vibrational state. So if I use I have to, I'm always going to do things that I don't want to do. You see?
Exactly. And, you know, I tell my students, Christina, I say, you know, you don't have to do anything if you don't want to. I mean, you exactly. have free will. You have free will. You can choose to create whatever life you want to create for yourself. You don't have to be tied into external demands or external expectations. I like the distinction between I have to and I must. Must has a sense of urgency for us personally, that this is something I must do if I'm going to continue to grow. But it's not something I have to do, but it's something I must do. And when I say I must do something, I've already bought into the fact that what doing this is going to just promote greater personal growth and connectivity with the people around me and a greater sense of my purpose in the world. So I like that distinction between those two words. That's the first time I've heard that. And you're right. I think how words have a lot of specific meaning. And even with individuals who are grieving, because I've dealt a lot with that, I'm always very conscious of the words that I use with them.
Yes, I realize that you do not use past. You use transitioned, which I
love. Yes, I use the term transition to refer to my ancestors who have left the physical world. But I'm also willing to accept and understand that other individuals don't see death as a transition. They may see death as passing on. They may see death as you know, walking on, however they conceptualize that. But my job is to kind of, is to meet them where they're at with their verbiage so I can establish a relationship with them. And then as we can, that relationship grows, I might be able to suggest other ways of looking at depth. But it's just meeting them where they're at and understanding what their specific language means to them as they're processing, you know, major life events.
And especially major life events, such as the ones that you have been through. And getting to realize the fact that, you see, you talked about generations. And with the generations, the thing is the following. The happiness is not being passed from one generation to another, but the suffering is. And when one person within this lineage, within this genealogical tree, is until one person is able to feel that suffering that was continuously passed from one generation to another, and until that person decides to go through that suffering and to process it and to transform it into an asset. And this is where the constellations come into place. You know, I've heard about the family constellations and about the fact that the suffering will continue from one generation to another until one person is willing to resurface it. And that is when the new life begins. And that is why we never, and deep down, deep buried secrets that are passed from one generation to another, that is what the secrets, they lead to diseases.
Yeah, and if the rules that contribute to unhealthy family dynamics are passed down from generation to generation without any intervention being done to help individuals constantly change those, it's going to be what it's going to be. I mean, that dysfunction is going to proliferate and proliferate and proliferate, and that's the basis for intergenerational trauma. And yes. And I've said to individuals, I believe our history is inextricably woven into our DNA. And we carry that history us from generation to generation. But we have the empowerment to be able to change our history one interaction at a time with an individual. Just because our history is our history doesn't mean we can't transcend it. But we transcend it, but at the same time, we honor our history because that's made us who we are.
Yes, and we also need to honor our ancestors, as you said, by even for some people who would like to know how can we honor, how can we make peace. It's even enough to light a candle, for example, for a specific number of days that you've deemed fit. No, nights, not days. Light a candle or take a tree and like a sap and just bury it. To a place where you think that one of your ancestors lived, or one of your grandmothers or great-grandmother. And that is that is enough for them to know that, okay, we are remembered.
Yes. And I think the biggest thing, Christine, I think for everybody in this lifetime, when they transition or pass away or die, again, however we conceptualize death, is that they're going to be forgotten. And that nobody's going to remember them. So any little thing that we can do to remember and honor our ancestors, even if it's like you said, lighting a candle, saying a prayer in their name, having a conversation with them, it keeps them in our hearts and it maintains those bonds that are extremely important, you know, to keep our family lineage going and to keep our history going.
Yeah, indeed.
On your Reiki Tarot Healing website, you, and I love this passage, you allude to the fact that the self and other are intertwined. And in interacting with the other, we find the self, and the other is a mere reflection of us. How can buying into this empower individuals to embrace their uniqueness and eliminate the need to constantly compare themselves with others?
Now, with this question, there is a quote that comes to my mind. I don't know who said it. But it's a quote, it's not my words. It says, "I am not who you think I am. I am who you think you are." So whatever you're telling me that I am, it's literally who you are. But it's just that unwilling to accept it or unwilling to recognize it, or, you know. And it is only the people who know who they are able to see to express the beauty within the other. So for example, when you say, but it's also very interesting because I might say that you are so beautiful, but I don't feel it. Or you are so wise, but maybe I'm just cunning. Maybe I just want something out of you. Maybe my intention is to flatter you so that you would feel better, so that you would give me whatever I want from you. So you see, and us, with that intuition that I was talking about, we have the capacity to realize whether when someone is being cunning or when someone is being truly, authentically genuine with us. Because whenever someone, and we don't need in life, we don't need to be flattered by anyone's praises, and we don't need to be disheartened by anyone's insults. Because, so again, I'm not going to be disheartened, but I'm not going to be flattered either. And why is that? Because I know the truth. Now, in order for us to reach that truth, we need to liberate ourselves from any type of conditioning. And I'm not talking about the society only. I'm talking about everything. Mm-hmm. If you really want to know whether for example, let's take a religious person or not, try to find out what happened before religions. Mm-hmm. Was there no life before religions? Oh, yes, it was. What type of life was there before the religion? Let's take a look at the Mesopotamians because they are very, very old. Let's take a look at the history before religions. Let's take a look at the history before a specific time that I think that I'm being shaped. So you see, the more you know about whatever happened in the history, before Christ, let's say, the more you know about that life, the more you will get in touch with yourself, the more you will get in touch to your true self. But the more you are being, the more you believe that you are whomever you were told that you are, the less you're going to be able to find that truth within yourself that I'm talking about. And obviously, you're not going to know who you are. And by not knowing who you are, you're just going to buy into that being flattered or being disheartened. Mm. You know what I mean? So this is what I always want. Like, if there is one thing that I did in this world is to ruffle feathers. This is how I got to know the truth. Without ruffling any feathers, I would not be. And don't get me wrong, if you ruffle feathers, it means that you're burning inside. But if you're burning inside, it means that there is something wrong with you because you cannot contain that information. So why am I burning? Okay. So then I realize that burning inside is my vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Okay. What do I do with it? I'm going to show it. I'm going to put it on the table. And if I have to cry in front of a meeting with the CEOs, maybe I'm going to show that vulnerability because you know why? Because these are people too. Mm-hmm. So in showing your vulnerability, which is like a candle lit on the table, this is how people get to know who you truly mm-hmm. are. And then they will have a self-reflection about who they are themselves. Mm-hmm. You see, because we are not who we think we are, right?
Now, there's a teaching from my favorite book on the Afterlife of Billy Fingers by Andy Kagan that says life is sometimes illusion posing as truth. And I'm probably paraphrasing that, but it is. I mean, there's a lot of things that if we look beyond the illusion, we see the true motivations of an individual, or we see the true value or in a situation, or we see what's actually going on contextually. The thing that I liked about the self and the other is that, you know, I'm kind of going off a little bit on, you know, the Carl Jung's work with the shadow element, you know, the shadow being the person we don't want to be, but we contain the microcosm, the macrocosm. I have every potentially good trait and negative trait that lies within me. And so that when we can expose the good and the yin and the yang to each other, we're being in service with each other. And what we see in ourselves, we usually see in others. And sometimes how we see others, and this is why comparison needs to be taken with a grain of salt. If I'm comparing you negatively with me, if I'm seeing myself negatively, I'm going to project how I see the world onto you. So that comparison really isn't valid because I'm projecting what I believe is my own lack of self-worth or my own shortcomings on you, because I'm not prepared to own that. I'm not prepared to be authentic with the fact that, look, I have these shortcomings. I need help. I need to be able to practice vulnerability with somebody who I believe can help me reach my better version of myself, and then
of
move
yourself.
On.
Yeah.
And vulnerability doesn't mean I have to have a lasting relationship with that person. It just means that person for that particular moment has come into my life to help me with the dilemma that I have about myself or about a situation that I'm dealing with. That person provides me with the resources, and there's no strings attached or expectation that we have to have a relationship moving forward. And for individuals who have been hurt, they will equate vulnerability with the fact that I became vulnerable, I got hurt, so therefore I'm not going to be vulnerable. They mistake vulnerability for the inability to trust.
And you see also at the bottom, so we have vulnerability, which is something that it's almost like a disease now, you know, like it's perceived as a disease. That's what I mean. I mean, it's not a disease, but it is being perceived as such. Like if I'm being vulnerable, and there is another thing as well. For example, what if I show myself, I show my true self to a person that will not even care about what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Aren't I going to feel even more hurt that I opened myself to a person that I think that I thought, you know? But in the end, it all goes down to that shame, yeah. You see? And the shame is the worst, it's very difficult to process shame. And shame is like literally at the bottom of all those feelings that makes us feel unworthy. Shame is the greatest. So this shame, in addition to vulnerability, keeps us locked. Because if you're not being vulnerable, if you're not being like, and when you admit that, when you admit all those feelings within yourself, when you admit and when you're able to talk about them, about your life, together with that shame and whatever you did, then you realize that, okay, I'm free now. My person is not determined. My person is not determined basically by whatever I say, by the things that I say, or by the things that I do. I am not who I say. I am not whatever I say I'm doing. And I'm not whomever you think I am because of what I say. So you see, we are not we don't have to be identified with the things that we do and with the things that we say. And when we separate these, the things that we do and the things that we say, we get to know towards, and then you will not have any shame or any vulnerability of exposing yourself.
Yep. Because any missteps we make in life, any decisions that did not turn out to be the way we planned, is just a reflection of the circumstances beyond our control. And we can't assume control or exert control over circumstances that were uncontrollable. So we shouldn't have any shame or guilt or remorse. You know, we have to realize that we did the best we could given the circumstances that were dealt. And there's no shame in that for sure.
Yeah, indeed.
Christina, if you're going to leave our viewers and listeners with one thing today, what would that be?
Try to seek the truth within yourself, knowing that in this world, all truths are wrapped up in lies and all lies are wrapped up in truths. If you pay close attention to it, you will see everything is based on intention. And now it's up to us to decide what is the intention behind. So that's what I'm saying, that all truths are wrapped up in lies so that you would be deluded into thinking whatever. And all lies are wrapped up in truths so that you would not seek it.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that sparks for me is the importance of using critical thinking to determine what is truth, what is lies, what truth lies within the lies, and what lies lie within the truth. And that all starts with critical thinking and trusting your intuition in the process.
The intuition. And if I align myself to a certain lie, I don't have to be ashamed of living that lie. You know what I mean? Like, I have to own the fact that I am lying. Mm-hmm. And I have to own the fact that I'm saying the truth. But I have to own it. And then I have to bear the consequence, because I am willing to bear the consequence in order for me to be able to become the better version of myself and compare myself with my former self.
And I think any behavior we engage in has a specific set of consequences attached to it. As long as we're willing to not only experience those consequences, but all those consequences, good or bad, it's going to lead us to, I think, develop our own uniqueness, break free from the shackles of comparison, and again, be the creator of our own reality in conjunction with the universe. So my last question for you, Christina, is if individuals want to get in touch with you, find out more about your services, retain your services, what's the best way for them to do that?
So they can reach out to me on ReikiTarotHealing.com. This is one of the platforms that I can be contacted at, as well as polyglotprecisiontranslations.com. This is the other site that I have, which deals with translations and interpreting. So mainly these are the two ones, and obviously the social media, which they have the same name, Reiki Tarot Healing and Polyglot Precision Translations. So yeah, this is where I'm usually at.
And I'll make sure, Christina, all of your contact information gets into the episode notes. And I want to thank you for spending time with me. I know you're in the UK, so it's got to be like 1 or 2 in the afternoon right there now. So thank you for spending part of your Saturday with me and with our listeners and our viewers. And thank you for being just a valuable guest contributor today.
Thank you so much, Dave, and it's been a pleasure for me too.
And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.